Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Episode 106 of the Shock Jacques Knicks podcast on the Posting and Toasting Podcast Network. Sean St. Jacques back here with you for another week of Knicks and NBA talk. We're in the final stage. We're in the NBA finals now. We'll talk Suns, Bucks going into game two of the finals. We'll look back at game one. We'll look at also how the series could potentially pan out moving forward. And obviously we'll talk plenty of Knicks, NBA draft and news as well. And just NBA draft potential in general moving forward as the offseason, at least for the Knicks and all but two teams, moves on. So there's a lot to get to, as always, on the show this week. We'll start with the finals, I think, just because, obviously, it was a pretty entertaining game one. Game two will have happened. Obviously, we get caught in the air again here, a tough time with the podcast having to be recorded on a Thursday and put out for Friday morning. So we won't have a chance to fully react to Game 2 until next week, but we got plenty to talk about with Game 1 and obviously the series as a whole moving forward. You guys will obviously know the result of Game 2 when the podcast goes out. Okay, Game 1 of the series. Now, to be fair, the biggest storyline going into Game 1 was the health status of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He ended up playing. He ended up playing well in the game. Also, I think he really shined at times in the game. However, Giannis wasn't the only one making their NBA Finals debut in Game 1. There were plenty of NBA Finals debuts. Listen, Chris Middleton led the way for the Bucks, 29 points. He was really, really good again. He's had a phenomenal postseason, a huge reason the Bucks are Eastern Conference champions for the first time since the mid-70s. 74, I believe, was the last time they were in an NBA Finals. The Suns haven't been there since 93, I believe, when the Suns, led by Charles Barkley, lost to the MJ-led Bulls in the Finals in six games. So Middleton was great. Giannis, playing through an injury, you could tell, was not 100%, still had 20 points and 17 rebounds. However, not to be outdone, DeAndre Ayton making his Finals debut. 22 points and 19 rebounds. 19 rebounds for an essential playoff novice. I mean, he's had an unbelievable postseason. I said earlier on, I believe, before the playoffs started, that if the Suns were going to go on a run, their X factor was DeAndre Ayton. He's been more than that. He's been a key cog in what the Phoenix Suns have been able to do this postseason. So I give him a ton of credit for what he's done. He was dominant in Game 1. But the star amongst the stars was Chris Paul, making his NBA Finals debut as well. 32 points, 4 rebounds, and 9 assists for CP3. A masterpiece again. He had a masterpiece in Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals. He added another piece to his portfolio to go up in a museum one day of his triumphs. I mean, it was another really phenomenal performance, and what a way to kick off your NBA Finals debut in style at home. And honestly, the Bucks, despite great performances, were never really in control of this game. Suns had it in pretty much their hands for most of the night. There was, I'll say this, watching the game, there weren't many times where I thought the Bucks were going to go on and win the game. There weren't many opportunities where I thought the Suns would let it go. They defended really well. The Bucks struggled at times. I think in the third quarter in particular, where they just kind of didn't get their feet under them. And listen, the Suns and Bucks played two pretty tight quarters to start. And then I thought that the third quarter, the Suns kind of took control of the game. But even during the first half, I never thought the Bucks were going to have a lead and hold on to it. You know, that kind of a thing. So the Bucks had a little bit of fight in the fourth. In the end, the Suns won it relatively comfortably, 118 to 105. Now, it's game one. If recent history tells us, home teams normally do very well in game ones. That doesn't mean they win the series. Game two, which you'll know the result of, is a vital game for the Bucks. I think if they snag it, this could be a very, very interesting series. I really do. I think if the Suns, I think have been one of the few teams this postseason who have not dropped an early game at home all postseason. I'm trying to think of when they've lost this postseason. The only time they did was the Lakers series, when the Lakers beat a wounded Suns team without Chris Paul, who was dealing with that shoulder injury. At the time, they tied the series at one, and to be fair to the Suns, they went to LA, and they got a game back in the series. They reestablished home court, and they won the series in six games. So I take that back. The Suns have been in this position before. If they do drop game two, and you'll know the result, obviously. But I'm excited to see how they do. I mean, obviously, the game two in the Western Conference Finals ended up being crucial with the Clippers looking like they were going to win it. And then Paul George missing some key free throws down the stretch and leading to the DeAndre Ayton tip jam with about 0.6 seconds left that ended up winning game two for the winning game two for the Suns in the Western Conference Finals. And that ended up being key because the Clippers, as we expected, did get back into that series, forced it to game six, which the Clippers ended up dropping at home, obviously, through a CP3 masterpiece in game six. So listen, it's going to be a fun series, especially if the Bucks do get game two. I just worry about Giannis's health. I think that's probably the biggest X factor of this entire series is what is the status going to be of Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's going to be, I think, what really dictates it. But if you're a Bucks fan, I think you've got to feel a lot better than you did going into game one about Giannis's health. He fought tooth and nail in that game, and he showed a lot of good things, but can that continue, right? That's going to be the question mark moving forward for this Bucks team. How much more can they push out of Giannis in this series? Because frankly, their chances of winning the Larry O'Brien depend on it. So it's, you know, the fact that the Bucks have a lot still to deal with here in that regard is going to be extremely interesting to me. I'm not exactly sure, you know, how the coaching staff's going to deal with it. I think they're going to have to do almost minute by minute, right? How they're going to handle Giannis. I mean, you have to monitor him at all times. It's going to be very, very intriguing. I just want to throw this out there as well, because Devin Booker was phenomenal as well. I know he took a lot of shots, but he had 27 points in 42 minutes. His phenomenal postseason continues. And by the way, 1 of 8 from three. Devin Booker and Chris Paul in general have just been phenomenal from the mid-range. And I think multiple guys have started to point that out in the media in general. They kill you from that mid-range spot. And I remember a year or two ago that the thought was, is the mid-range jumper dead in the NBA? It's alive and well, because the team that's favored to win the championship right now is relying on it heavily at times because they're so good at it. Monty Williams, I think, has realized, and other people have pointed this out as well, but it's very clear to see that he knows how good this team is from the mid-range and encourages them to take those shots. Why not be good at, you know, do what we're good at, right? And the Suns have been the epitome of that all season long. I think they were just really, really good. And by the way, they won game one with an awful game from Jay Crowder on the offensive end of the floor. Jay Crowder had 1 point, and he got that point, obviously, from the free throw line. He went 0 of 8 from the field and 0 of 5 from downtown. He still had 9 rebounds, fought extremely hard as he always does. On the defensive end, he put in a classic supporting act performance and was just phenomenal. A key piece to, you know, what this Phoenix Suns team does. He answers a lot of those questions that people have about their defensive acumen. And obviously, talking about the supporting cast, 10 from Cameron Payne and 14 from one of my breakout stars of this postseason, Mikal Bridges, who's just been phenomenal for Phoenix. So they're in the driver's seat. I think that's pretty clear to see. I think Phoenix, especially if they win game 2, and I had them winning this series, frankly, before it started, but I think if they win game 2, I don't see the Bucks winning this series. I don't. I think Phoenix could easily win one in Milwaukee, and I think that might do it. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Listen, I love this series to go 6 or 7 games. I think we've earned that as NBA fans. We've had a great postseason so far. Many memorable series, many memorable moments throughout. But I think if this series can go 6 games, I think we'd be very, very happy with that. But I'll say this, if Phoenix keeps playing the way that they are playing and we don't get to see, you know, 100% from Giannis consistently, this series could go 5 games. And that's no knock on the Bucks, but it just shows you how good Phoenix is. I think they've really been the best team this entire postseason. And I think it's coming to fruition in the finals. And before the postseason started, I had the Jazz winning the championship. I wasn't sure about the Suns because of Chris Paul's health, right? And he was hurt early in the postseason, right? And he dealt with it. He's come back. He's been dealing with other injuries, COVID issues as well. Every team's been dealing with injuries. I think one thing I didn't like to hear was that, you know, well, the Suns haven't been dealt as many blows. No, they have. They have been dealt big blows. Devin Booker's been playing through injuries. Chris Paul's been dealing with a plethora of problems. I mean, their two biggest players have been dealing with issues the entire postseason. So the Sixers and the Hawks and the Bucks and, you know, you look at the Jazz, everyone dealt with the Clippers. So have the Suns. This whole thing that, well, if the Suns win the championship is the Lakers, every team's dealt with it. First and foremost, have the Suns gotten a little lucky? Maybe, but Chris Paul looked like he was going to be out for the entire postseason against the Lakers. No one was talking about it then. So the Suns have dealt with just as much as everybody else. I don't want to hear this whole lucky stuff. First of all, you're dealt the cards you have, and second of all, the Suns have had some tough hands in this postseason. So I'm not buying that for a second. And I don't think you should either. This is absolutely nonsense to me. Listen, at one point this postseason looked like LeBron and the Lakers were the best team. Yes, they obviously were dealt a huge blow with Anthony Davis's injury. But they built the team like that. So that's on the Lakers. You know, like that. That's not on anybody else. And by the way, I think Phoenix beats them even if Anthony Davis is healthy. We saw the signs. So I don't buy that for a second. And by the way, the only reason the Lakers took a lead in that series was because Chris Paul got hurt. Remember that. Anytime Chris Paul played in that series, he was the best player on the floor. So I don't buy that for a second. I don't. Along with, by the way, Devin Booker, who had a huge series against the Lakers as well. So I'm not buying it. I don't buy that. So you get the cards that you're dealt, you deal with it, and the Suns have been dealt some pretty tough hands. They've had a few 7-2 offsuits this postseason. They've been able to handle it. So I don't buy into that whatsoever. The Suns need to get a lot of credit if they win this championship. A ton. They were counted out, like many teams have been during this postseason. And Monty Williams, when he showed the signs in the bubble, him and the front office made the right moves, bringing in Chris Paul, shoring up this team, and this team is delivered. Again, To be fair to the Bucks, we're one game in. The Bucks are a deep team. They're a good team. They've won games in this postseason without Giannis Antetokounmpo. But I think if the Suns keep playing like they're playing, I don't think the Bucks win this series. I don't. I think with the Suns having home court, that's crucial, to be fair. I think if the Bucks had home court, I think it might be a tighter series, even without Giannis at 100%. But the Suns have home court where they've been dominant all postseason long. I think that that's going to be the difference in this series, along with the play of Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and the supporting cast. So I like the Suns moving forward. We'll see how Game 2 goes. You guys will know the result of that. But we'll see. Listen, it's great to see both of these teams in the finals, right? I think that I've said this multiple times this postseason, but it's just a beautiful thing to see new teams making history. In the NBA, we don't get that a lot. We really don't. I was looking back at some of the prior NBA champions of the last, I don't know, 10 years. It feels like the last one that was really, you know, somewhat historic as far as first was that Dallas championship when they surprised Miami in the NBA finals. First year of the new Big Three with LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. You know, since then it's been Heat championships, Spurs championships, Laker championships, you know, that kind of a deal. So it's Golden State, right, with their championships mixed in there as well. Cleveland with LeBron over Golden State coming back from 3-1 probably is that other one that you would throw into that mix. But besides Cleveland's championship and Dallas's, there haven't been many that have been surprising. So I think that, you know, this is a special thing. If you're an NBA fan, neutral or not, and you're watching this, we've got to enjoy this one. Because obviously because we had the bubble last year, but also because we don't get to see new moments like this very often. You know, either CP3, Devin Booker, and that crew are going to get their first championship, and Phoenix is going to get their first championship ever. Or Milwaukee with Giannis, Middleton, Lopez, and that crew getting their Jrue Holiday getting their first championship and the Bucks' first championship since I believe Lual Cinder, aka Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, led the Bucks to a championship back in I believe 1970 or 71. So we're going to get history either way, and it's very rare that that happens. Don't get me wrong. I love it when it's Lakers-Celtics or we get a historic championship from a big-time franchise. The finals are always great, right? But there's something special in sports when it's the first one, right? When it's the very first one for a player, an organization. That's a special time. That's really making history. Or the first time after a big drought. Those are the ones, I think, that bring more people together than the Lakers winning a 19th championship or the Celtics winning a 19th championship or, you know, a super team, quote-unquote, although these are two really good teams, being the favorites all year and then winning the championship. So this is a great NBA moment. I think the league has got to be very happy with it. The Suns have the lead in the series. We'll see if that continues. Again, you guys will know the result of Game 2 when you listen to this podcast. And we'll continue to look at this series closely as it moves on. It's a very, very cool thing. One last thing, because then we're going to take a break, and then we'll talk some NBA draft, and we'll talk some Knicks NBA draft as well. The Bucks. I just want to mention this real quick. The Bucks have been very good at home during this postseason. I think that should not be taken lightly. They have fought back from a lot themselves this postseason in general, whether it's been the Giannis injury or just, you know, falling behind in series. You know, they dodged a couple of bullets in that Brooklyn series in particular to get here. So this Bucks team is going to be ready. It's a veteran group. It's to be fair, obviously novices in the finals, first time they've been here, but this is a team with a lot of depth, a lot of experience. They've dealt with the Dante DiVincenzo injury extremely well this postseason. Also, I think that's worth mentioning. He was a starter for them for a lot of the season, a big chunk and he ends up not being able to feature for most of the postseason. And the Bucks have dealt with it. So I think you look at how Milwaukee has gotten here as well. And you got to give credit to Mike Budenholzer and the entire staff. I think that they deserve a lot of credit, whether they win the title or not. The Bucks made history this year. I think this is big for Giannis, as far as maybe being a Buck moving forward, that they have made progress and they have gotten to an NBA Finals. And I think his legacy in Milwaukee is in good standing regardless, because the Bucks have not been there in 4 decades, and he's the one that got them back to the NBA Finals, along with Middleton and company. So the Bucks and the Suns both will be able to hold their heads up high after this postseason is over. But obviously one of them, and I think it's going to be Phoenix, is going to lift the Larry O'Brien trophy when it's all said and done. Okay, we'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk some Knicks draft, we'll talk NBA draft storylines in general, and a whole lot more on the Shock Shack Knicks podcast on the Posting and Toasting Podcast Network. All right, second half of the show, we're going to dive into some draft stuff again this week. Honestly, not the biggest week for news. The NBA Finals has been the biggest thing this week, and that's a beautiful thing. So we really just, you know, I had to spend a lot of the show on that. A ton of good storylines there, a ton of fun stuff to talk about. And again, you'll know the results of Game 2. We'll talk more finals next week. But let's talk NBA Draft and dive a little bit more into that. I do want to talk Knicks, but first, I want to talk about this storyline that's been kind of floating around. Basically, like, just before I got on to do this podcast, ESPN's Jonathan Givony, and apologies if I'm mispronouncing that, he's reported that Oklahoma State star Cade Cunningham, pardon me, is not a lock to go number one overall in the draft. And the Pistons are exploring the possibility of trading the number one pick in the draft. According to ESPN as well, the Thunder, the Cavs, the Pelicans, and the Rockets have all inquired about what it would take to trade up to number one in the draft. I'm not going to look this up. I didn't have time. But off the top of my head, I don't remember the last time the number one pick has been traded in an NBA draft. Heck, I don't even remember the last time it was traded in an NFL draft. This is it's been a long time, I have to think, right? I'm really intrigued by this. Now, again, this is not a lock at all. They're exploring their options, right? Other teams being floated out there to potentially move up include Golden State, by the way. And Golden State's got a little bit of firepower here. They've got the 7th pick. They've got the 14th pick. James Wiseman's a piece they have as well. The Pistons were high on James Wiseman last year, according to ESPN as well. So this is very interesting to me. It's something definitely worth watching. You know, all of those teams mentioned, right? The Pelicans, the Rockets, the Warriors, the Cavs, OKC. All of them have pretty interesting packages that they could bring up here to give the Pistons something to think about on draft night. That also tells me that the Pistons are either not sold on Cade Cunningham, or they don't think they need that position right now. And they really want to rebuild and get a lot of picks, or maybe get a big player, something like that. I'm very intrigued. I'm very intrigued. Now, again, we're still a pretty far ways out from the draft. A lot can change. But this is a story. This is something. You know, obviously the draft, you never know, especially with the NBA draft, the NFL draft as well. Things are thrown out there to try and spice things up, right? This, you know, controlling the PR battle can help in the boardroom, as they say. I'm curious. This is interesting. To be fair, And I think, to be fair, most people that have seen the combine and have looked into the prospects thoroughly, and even people like me that, you know, that talk about it on a podcast, anyone will tell you that, you know, Cade Cunningham is probably the best prospect in this draft. And for me, watching him in college and things like that, hard to argue. Hard to argue with that. I think Cade Cunningham, when you look at what's available, is the most complete player in the draft, has the highest ceiling, and could be a very big help to an NBA roster right away. But the Pistons aren't sure. Or they're trying to drive the price up and see what they can possibly get. But that also tells me that they're not certain, or they would just take him. You know what I mean? You don't go into this kind of thing if you're 100% sure you're taking him. So there's a little bit of doubt here with Detroit, what they're going to do. Very intriguing for me. There hasn't been very much, you know, huge, like, league-sweeping draft night drama in some time. This has a little bit of legs. This has some potential here to be very interesting as we get closer and closer to the draft. Detroit obviously won the draft lottery, right? And most of the time, you know, you'll take your Zion and you'll be okay, you know, or your first pick. Pick who you think's best for the job and you move on. But we don't know what Detroit's going to do now. This kind of puts it up in the air. And I like that going into an NBA draft. Again, we still have, you know, 3-4 weeks until we get there, but this is exciting. I'm a little intrigued now as to what Detroit can do. Now, as far as this going with the Knicks obviously have 2 first-round picks themselves, some young pieces. However, I think what the prize here is not big enough for the Knicks to be involved. I think that's why you don't hear their name involved here. The Knicks have their future guys. I think if you see any of those guys moved, like we talked about last show, they're going to be moved for a Damian Lillard, a Kawhi Leonard, somebody like that. They're not going to be moved for Cade Cunningham. The Knicks feel like they've got their young core. And if they're going to use any of those young guys like a Mitchell Robinson or someone like that in a trade, they're going to be getting a superstar back. That's what it looks like as far as potential deals for trades. So I think the Knicks will stand pat. I think they will do what they want to do with those 2 first-round picks. Again, I talked about Ayo Dosunmu a week ago out of Illinois, who I would love in late in the first round if the Knicks can swing it. And then they have that 2nd first-round pick where I think the Knicks have a lot of options. I really do. I think when you look at the late first-round options here, there's a lot of guys on the board that I think the Knicks could be happy with. A Jared Butler, Chris Duarte comes to mind as well. Trey Mann could be another option late in the first round. If the Knicks wanted to trade up, again, Davion Mitchell could be an option as well. So then you look at that early 2nd-round pick. There's good options for the Knicks there as well. So I think that the Knicks don't really need to move here. I think the Knicks have a ton they could get from their 2 spots at currently 19 and 21 in the first round. So I'm excited for where the Knicks are at, kind of transitioning over to that because, you know, Cade Cunningham, that's all we got on it. You know, the Detroit's got a little bit of doubt as to what they're going to do. So I'm curious to see how that pans out for them. But then when you look at the Knicks, 2 first-round picks, roughly $50 million in cap space. A lot can happen here. A lot of articles also talking about, you know, what the Knicks will do with those picks. Sharif Cooper has been brought up out of Auburn. I think it's a very interesting one. There's some doubts about him. But I think that he could be a really, really solid point guard, potentially, for the Knicks. And obviously, another name that's been thrown out there a little bit more recently in a few mock drafts has been James Bouknight out of UConn. Guy that played 1 year in the Big East last year with Connecticut after they transitioned from the American. And, you know, was injured at times during the season and including parts of conference play. But towards the end, really helped UConn get to the NCAA tournament. And obviously they kind of flopped at the end of the postseason. They lost to Creighton in the Big East tournament semis, who ended up getting blown out by Georgetown in the finals, and then in the championship game, I should say. And then in the NCAA tournament, they lost to a Maryland team that really wasn't great down the stretch either of the regular season in the conference tournament. So as a team with Booknight involved, they didn't really finish the season that well. But James Booknight is a really strong prospect. That's not up for debate here. So Booknight's an interesting option as long as, again, I think the Knicks need to get a point guard here. If they get two guards, I think I'd be over the moon with that. If you get Sharif Cooper, maybe you think an Ayo Dosunmu is not going to fall to you. James Booknight's a great option there. If you come out with any two of Dosunmu, Booknight, and Cooper, you're feeling pretty good about yourselves if you're the Knicks with that first round. And then you're looking into the second round, that early second round pick, and you're feeling, you're feeling like you can mix it up a little bit. There's guys available. And by the way, some have Sharif Cooper going late in the second round. So that kind of gives you some options. It gives you some opportunities to, if that happens, obviously. I'm not saying that you go by the mock drafts if you're the Knicks. I'm just saying that if that were to happen, if Sharif Cooper falls out of the first round because you liked somebody else, he could be there for you at 32. He could be. It's possible. So it's an interesting, a very interesting situation where the Knicks could get a lot better through the draft. But to be fair, the interesting part as well is that some people have James Booknight going in the lottery. That's the other problem, right? James Booknight might get taken very early in this draft. He could be a top 10 pick. It's very possible. There's teams up there where he would fit in pretty well. Maybe even a Golden State, an OKC, a Sacramento, maybe New Orleans. Charlotte at 11 would be, I think, an interesting one as well. They could be looking for a shooting guard. I think anyone that goes to San Antonio is going to feel pretty good about themselves. So even Indiana at 13, I think, would be a pretty good fit for James Booknight. So we'll have to see. He's a hot commodity at the moment, at least in mid to late first round, potentially in the top 10. We'll have to see. But very curious to see what happens with James Booknight. And then, listen, I think, to be fair, Ayo Dosunmu could go pretty early in this draft as well. Could be a top end of the first round pick. A couple mock drafts have him going to the Rockets at 18. Some have maybe OKC at 16 or Memphis at 17 being interested in him as well. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, 100%. Knicks won't be at the Knicks also, before we talk a little bit more about the early second round pick, Knicks have a very late pick in the second round as well at 58, very late in the draft, the third to last pick in this draft. And this is where you could take a chance on somebody if you get your Dosunmu or your Cooper, your Butler, your Booknight. 58, guys like John Petty will be available. Maybe a guy that's not on the board, a Sandro Mamukelashvili out of Seton Hall. Aaron Henry out of Michigan State. Another guy that I think about as well is Marcus Zegarowski out of Creighton. The only issue there is he's a point guard, so you might have already addressed that, hopefully by then. So he probably wouldn't be on your radar if you're the Knicks. One name that was asked to me actually by a buddy of mine when I told him I was going to talk draft this week was Sam Hauser, who's out of Virginia, formerly of Creighton. His younger brother Joey Hauser plays for Tom Izzo at Michigan State. They actually used to play together at Marquette. I'm worried a little bit with Sam Hauser only because he feels a little bit too one-dimensional to me. He feels like a shooter and not too much else. Listen, he's got a solid mid-range, can fade away on in the post, but to be fair, if you're going to take somebody like that late in the second round, it's not a bad place to do it. You know what I mean? He's an option for the Knicks who could, you can never have enough shooting. But I would look more into, high ceiling kind of guys. Like a John Petty's somebody to me who maybe low on a lot of people's radars, but could have an explosive NBA career. Sandro Mamukelashvili is a guy that not nearly enough people are talking about that could at some point be a difference maker for your ball club. He's got that kind of NBA ceiling. He's almost built for the NBA. So I'm very excited to see if he gets picked or what happens with him as an undrafted free agent. We'll have to see. His teammate, former teammate at Seton Hall, Miles Powell, obviously with Knicks connections as well through the G League. So we'll see. We'll have to see how that pans out. But the Knicks have a ton of good options. And I have to reiterate this as well, right? We talk about the draft and things of that nature. This is probably the most excited I've been for an NBA draft for the Knicks in a long, long time. There's a lot of positives that could come out of this. I think the Knicks have to be extremely satisfied with the position they're in at the moment. And I think when you look at the situation as a whole, I think Tom Thibodeau's got a ton of options. We talked about trades that could be made, by the way, as well. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Knicks trade one of these four picks at some point. So I think, and then what makes this even nicer, right, is, you know, what RJ Barrett's doing with Canada, what Emmanuel Quickley and Obi Toppin are getting to do with the U.S. select team. They're gaining that experience, and they're going to bring it back and get even better with this Knicks team. You just look at what this Knicks team could be next season, the year after that. There's a ton of upside just with what we've already got. Forget about potentially, you know, adding to that with a star or somebody like that. So I think when you look at the Knicks' future, when you look at the Knicks in this draft, things get very, very interesting. And it seems like things are going up in the right direction. And I think Tom Thibodeau, Leon Rose and company are doing a really good job. And we'll see if they can make the most in a 3-4 weeks time of this NBA draft. All right, before we get out of here, a few more minutes left in the show. Just going to run through the top 10 real quick. We did it a few weeks ago. Things have changed a little bit in some of the mock drafts. Again, we just told you earlier, obviously, the news with Cade Cunningham, that he is no longer a 100% thing as far as going to Detroit. Detroit's thinking about potentially trading this pick. Obviously, we talked about the teams who were interested. They're all high up in the draft, most of them at least. OKC has the sixth pick. Houston has the second pick. Cleveland are at 3. Golden State are at 7. So there's a lot of teams nearby in the draft. New Orleans, who are at 10, are interested. There's a lot of teams that are nearby that, you know, could potentially make a lot of moves. By the way, New Orleans not only has the 10th pick in this draft, but they also have, I believe, 2 second round picks as well. They're at 53. They're at 43. Actually, they have 3 second round picks. They're at 43 and they're at 40. Oh my gosh, they have 4. And they're at 34 as well. So they're at 34, 40, 43, and 53 in the second round. I didn't realize that. New Orleans actually might have the best package here to ship off to Detroit for this pick. They've got 5 draft picks and 4 second round picks. So if Detroit wants to move down and get a bleep ton of picks, maybe the Pelicans are the team that you look at here. The Pelicans might be the team that's got the best to offer for Detroit. 4 second round picks. I did not realize that. To be fair, they're not the only ones with multiple. OKC has 3 second round picks as well. So that's another team to look at. They weren't mentioned in the article, but I believe Toronto has multiple second round picks and they're at 4. So a lot of teams at the top have a lot of picks to kind of maneuver around here. It's very, very interesting. I did not realize that New Orleans had 4 second round picks in this draft, but they do. I don't think they're going to use all of them. I can't imagine, especially after getting rid of Stan Van Gundy, you know, you might as well go for it here. This is very interesting. I did not realize that, to be honest with you. So maybe the Pelicans, maybe the Thunder could be the two in more in the mix because they've got, you know, a little bit more to offer than maybe Cleveland does or maybe Houston, although Houston does have four first-round picks, so that actually might be the juicier option when you look a little bit deeper. They've got the picks at 18, 23, and at 24. So maybe it's the Rockets. I mean, this is very intriguing. This is extremely interesting because everyone's got a pretty good amount they can offer. Houston does not have any second round picks, but this is going to be extremely interesting if this is something that Detroit legitimately explores. I think when you look at the teams that are in the mix, Cleveland probably have the least amount to offer. I think their third pick might actually be their only pick in the draft. I'm looking through the draft order at the moment, and I don't see them again. So I think Cleveland's only got one pick in this draft. So they might have to look at future NBA drafts as far as what they're going to do with that. But Houston's got four first-round picks. The Pelicans have four second-round picks. And the Houston Rockets have three second... The Thunder have three second-round picks. Rockets have four first-round picks, including the second overall pick. This is interesting. They love Cade Cunningham. They've got the ammunition. So do the Pelicans. And so do the Thunder. Golden State, I guess we can briefly look into them. They've got two first-round picks in this draft. And I don't think they have any second-rounders. They do not. So they're another. They have at least an extra pick in the first round to work with. But I guess when you're looking at, again, depending on what Detroit wants, when you're looking at picks, Houston has probably got the best option here. They got a bleep ton of first-rounders. But the Pelicans are right there. They've got four second-round picks. And they've also, you know, they have a place if you really want to trade down where you could trade down pretty far. You get the 10th pick and then maybe a few second rounders in there and you can really, you know, map out what you want to do. But to be fair, if you get Houston's deal, you might have their second pick, but then you also get back in the late in the first round with possibly picks at 18 or 23 or 24, maybe multiples of that. So, oh man. This is extremely interesting. I harped on it maybe a little bit earlier, but this is a potentially massive story in the draft. If they're not sold Detroit on Cade Cunningham, this is where the draft could get extremely interesting. But again, really quick, we'll run through the rest of the top 10. Houston at 2, they're looking at probably Evan Mobley, maybe a Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green. Cleveland at 3, I think most people, unless they trade up, will get think they'll take Jalen Suggs out of Gonzaga. Maybe Jalen Green from the G League. Toronto, Orlando, OKC. You're looking at maybe a Green, a Scotty Barnes, Jonathan Kuminga. Maybe Keon Johnson, Jalen Johnson, and a Tennessee and Duke, respectively. Maybe even James Bouknight, where Golden State is, Orlando at 8. Sacramento, feels like a Keon or Jalen Johnson pick to me. Maybe Corey Kispert out of Gonzaga, although some people have him going 10th to New Orleans. At the moment, Kai Jones out of Texas, Moses Moody out of Arkansas, Zaire Williams out of Stanford, Franz Wagner out of Michigan. These are all guys that could be considered there. Even Ayo Dosunmu out of Illinois could be in that range at the end of the lottery as well. So there's a lot that can still happen, but these are fun storylines to talk about. Let me know what you guys think about the draft as a whole and about where the Knicks stand in it moving forward, and let me know what you think about this Cade Cunningham stuff. I'm very interested to get your thoughts on what you think's going to happen, or your thoughts on what you would do if you're the Knicks, or maybe the Rockets, the Pistons, obviously, what deal you'd rather have, and the Pelicans as well, and OKC, these teams that have a shot at maybe snagging and nabbing the number one pick in a trade from Detroit. Going to be very interesting to see how that pans out in the days and weeks to come, leading into the NBA draft. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Shock Jock Knicks podcast. Guys, thank you so much as always for listening. I will see you guys next time on the Shock Jock Knicks podcast on the Posting and Toasting Podcast Network.